The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
No! No! I told you not to do that. Found them! How many did you eat?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica, the Mandalorian edition.
This week, we're covering The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 2, Chapter 10, titled The Passenger.
All right.
Had a couple of passengers, huh?
Yeah, I guess there's a few. There's a few less once Baby Yoda gets done with them. But, I asked you guys for a Star Wars question, and we got a few. This week, our Star Wars question of the week comes from Ian Pettit, who asks, if you were about to show the Star Wars films to somebody who's never seen them before, what order would you show them in?
Good question.
What do you think, Rich? What order would you go with?
I like order and structure. So I think I would go with chronological order.
Of release?
No, not of release. Chronological order of the timeline in the universe. So, okay. Did you want me to list them? You know, start with episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, and then maybe Solo, and then definitely Rogue One, and then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. My favorite of those, of all that chronological order, as time happens in the universe, is Rogue One backing up to A New Hope. That was so cool at the end with Darth Vader, and then leading right into the opening shot in A New Hope.
Yeah. And those movies having come out, 40 years apart or something?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, this brings up some other questions for me, because my inclination would be to show them the original trilogy, episode 4, 5, and 6. Then 7, 8, and 9, and not show them the prequels. And I would, you know, so my question is, do we have to include them? But if we do, I think I would still show the prequels after as the final three and treat them like prequels and sort of not really part of the original release chronology. And I would definitely include Rogue One in the right place there too, because it deserves to be in the order. But I would put the prequels at the end. I would leave them the way they were released because I don't think they add that much, and you can actually ignore them and still get a pretty complete story.
You'd say, You'd show them what you feel like are the best of the Star Wars movies, and then say, if you're a completionist, you can watch these other ones too. But
just so you know.
Plus, there's something to be said for showing them the order when they were actually released as the directors and showrunners and creators intended, you know?
That's exactly what I would do. I always answer this way with book series like Chronicles of Narnia, Star Wars. I would always show in the order that they were released, because I feel like these movies are so much about little revelations and then going back to explore those revelations afterwards. And the emotional payoff comes from how they're laid out. So, for example, you see Darth Vader first appears in episode 4 on breaking into Leia's ship, coming through the smoke. He's just dark, mysterious, menacing figure. You know, he's the bad guy. And if you'd already seen him as whiny little Anakin in the previews, it wouldn't have quite the same punch to it, you know? I mean, it would be kind of a tragic feeling. So that might be interesting. But still, I just think, like, even Ben Kenobi, when he first appears on Tatooine and gives out his great dragon yowl, and you're like, he's kind of mysterious, and what's he going to turn out to be like? You know, Luke is searching him out, but is it even going to be worthwhile? Well, if you already know his character, then you're kind of robbed of all that. So I feel like the director's very, intentionally lay out, and the storytellers, how they want you to experience these things. And I think it works best on an emotional level if you watch them in the order that they were released. So that's the way I would always recommend them.
100%. Yeah, you can't argue, you can't deny that the story would be different if the prequels were actually made first, because that moment with Darth Vader coming onto Leia's ship just doesn't have the same impact, and it would be completely different, or at the very least it would be differently meaningful within the context of the story. So you've got to watch them in the way they were released.
It does for me. I like watching the characters grow and age on screen. I get just as much impact and emotional satisfaction from that. Like you mentioned Anakin being a whiny little bitch. He was. And then he grows up to be a complete badass.
It's tragic.
And you watch that transformation, and you're like, I can see that too. And then when he comes on the ship, you're like, oh no, he's going to kick some ass.
The thing is, it's impossible for the three of us to know, because we're too old and we saw them in the order that they came out, what the actual experience would be like if we watched them. You know, the only way you can know for sure is to have someone who doesn't know anything about Star Wars, doesn't know that Luke and Leia are brother and sister, you know, doesn't know that this little green guy is actually Yoda, and have them watch them in the different orders. Because in Empire Strikes Back, you don't know he's Yoda. You think he's a silly little character who's wasting Luke's time. But if you've already seen the prequels, then you know that. So there's no surprise there. Little things like that. Maybe it doesn't matter. Like you're saying, Rich, maybe it's just as rewarding to see them in the order that they happen in the story.
But that's another thing I was thinking about too, is what is the age of this person that has never seen them, that I'm introducing them to? If it's a kid, I would be much more inclined to show them the prequels first. Even though I think the beginning of the first prequel with all the trade negotiation stuff is totally ridiculous and not sort of kid friendly at all, whereas the rest of those movies are pretty kid friendly. But see, I might be inclined to go with them first if it's a younger person, if it's a child, rather than an adult coming to it, you know? So
yeah, that's
there's a lot of factors.
True. Well, I think we could keep going on with this, but we've laid out our orders. So there you go.
That's right.
And let's get into our top three highlights for this week's episode. It's The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 2, Chapter 10, The Passenger. So what did you guys think of this one overall?
Well, overall, I know I've said this before about certain episodes, but this one took me two viewings to appreciate. I did like it, but I was kind of 50-50 on it the first time I watched it. But after the second time, I took it in a little bit more, and I appreciated it much more. So I'm on board with it, but it took a couple of tries.
Yeah. I was fan number one from minute number one.
That's why we love to have you here, Rich. Everything's amazing.
Loved it. Well, I was thinking after I watched it, I was like, this has like all of my favorite things. Monsters, an epic journey, survival, spaceships. I mean, we got to see X-Wings. I was like, these are some of my favorite things.
When the spider bites.
Monsters and journeys and spaceships and blah.
All right, we need somebody out there to write and record that song. I think that's perfect. Come on, people.
I was kind of in the middle of you guys when I, first started. I mean, coming off that first one, you're set up in that mindset of balls to the wall action, and it was a little like low key. And I mean, save for the Marauders, but once he gets into town and there's the gambling and all that, I felt like it was a little low key. And then when the spiders came, it was super creepy and I was really getting into it. And then by the time it was over, I thought it was great. And on second watch, I just loved it. Like, cause I kind of had my expectation. I didn't have to worry about that cause I knew what I was getting, I guess. I don't know, but it was sort of a similar experience to what you were describing, Chris. Like on the second watch, I was like, man, that was a great episode. So I really liked it by the time I'd watched it. I actually watched it a third time because I wanted Bodhi to see it when he loved the spiders and everything.
He's a big horrific monster spider
he
fan.
He was into it. Yeah. Okay. Top three, Chris.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, I want to talk about the continuity of how this episode fits into the greater story a little bit, because again, on the first viewing, I was like, oh man, this is really standalone. This really has almost nothing to do with what Mando's trying to do. But I got much more out of it the second time because I was sort of over the initial, like, I'm just excited to be watching problem, and then I could pay attention a little bit more. But it starts off with the scene, like, almost immediately after the end of last week, right, where he's just racing through the desert back to Mos Eisley. And I really enjoyed how fast he was going. And that just seemed really fun. It felt like he was, like, really pushing it more than he was before.
I feel like there was more of a sense of speed with the land speeder than we've seen before. And maybe that's because when you're going in between, like, rocky areas that you could hit, it's more, feels more dangerous than you're just going across a barren desert, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But, like, he was really pushing I thought. And I really liked that. But the point is, like, it was right after last week. It was connected to that. And I felt like, oh, awesome. We're just going to keep going right from where we left off.
Where's Boba Fett? Come on.
Where's Boba Fett? But then, and then we had the fight with those guys who, like, clothesline him off the speeder bike. I thought that was fun. That was really good. They're trying to kidnap the child. And the jetpack trick was great, I thought, you know, when he shot the guy up into the air. And it all helped to remind me that, like, people are after him. They want to get him. They want to, I guess they want to kidnap Baby Yoda and stuff like that. And so I'm like, amazing. That's this sort of fits in. It's a good reminder for us viewers of what's going on and sort of what he's facing, you know. And then later on in the episode, when he encounters the New Republic X-Wings, again, that I kind of almost glossed over a little bit while I was watching it the first time, because probably like you, Rich, I was like, yeah, X-Wings, they look so cool. I wasn't even paying attention to what they were saying as much. But that scene, again, when I rewatched it, it's a good reminder, or they reveal that there's an arrest warrant out for him for freeing that prisoner, which connects back into season one, which I thought was really cool. And they explain that they let him go because he apprehended three other criminals. And so the New Republic might give him a bit of a pass, but there's always these outlaws looking for him and other, you know, bad guys and stuff. So, you know, bottom line, I really ended up appreciating that stuff about this episode, because the rest of it felt a little inconsequential to me, and I would have been really too far disconnected from the bigger story if they hadn't included these things. So again, I kind of missed it on the first time, but really appreciated it on the second time. And if there's anyone out there feeling like this episode had no impact on the greater story, I don't think that's true. And it was just my problem at first.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, you appreciated just it feeling connected to the greater whole of the series and referring back to things that have happened.
Yeah, like for that. Sure. And it wasn't immediately obvious to me, right? So I wanted to use this, you know, time to sort of bring that up in case anyone else was feeling the same way. It's certainly there. And I don't think the connection back to that prisoner episode in season one was all that obvious. So if you're kind of just a casual viewer of the show, I'm not sure everyone
might not have caught
it.
Yeah,
I might not have caught it. So, it's there, and I think it really does work, and that's good.
I mean, yeah, one of the listeners, Ben, said he thought it was almost filler, and I think I've said this kind of thing before on this podcast, but to me, this show, I feel like the plot is almost secondary. Like, it's almost an excuse. Because I feel like it's a show about moments, like being thrilled, or it's funny, or sometimes awe-inspiring, or like in this episode, scary, or just a lot of times just plain cool, like, wow, that's so cool. And like the plot is just an excuse to present us these moments that we get to thrillingly go through. And I think this show does those so well, because they really do make you like, oh my God, that's creepy, or oh, that's, you know, you laugh. Like, they feel really natural, and unlike, in my opinion, a lot of the stuff in some of the later movies, which feel like they're kind of going through the motions or trying to force it. I mean, sometimes the J.J. Abrams ones did a pretty good job of making you actually go, yeah, that was great. But other times, and especially in the prequels, it just felt so stiff and stale. And and but at this show, you can almost feel like the show makers just, oh my God, look at what we just did. That's cool. That's another way it reminds me of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Like, you can just tell that they were laughing their asses off as they were making that show, you know? And yeah, this show feels like that too, the genuine joy of the creators behind the scenes. And so that if I don't even, I personally, I mean, I don't begrudge anybody like you just mentioned, Chris, or anyone else who wants the plot to be moved forward. But for me personally, that's just very low priority. I just want to be thrilled.
I hear you, but I think we can ask for the best of both worlds. Yeah, right? We can have those amazing moments, and we can still have a satisfying, like, overall plot too. And
sure.
And I would never, I have used the word filler before. I don't know about this show, but about other shows.
Yeah.
I didn't specifically say it here because I don't think this was filler, even though that was running through my mind the first time. I quickly got over it. So,
like, to me, if an episode of The Mandalorian only had plot progression and no thrills, then I would be like, that was filler.
Yeah, that's a good, it's a good, interesting way to look at it for sure. I think we can have
boring.
Both, though,
yeah, right? Or that was boring. Rich,
number three. I kind of jumped the gun on there, and I was talking about some of my favorite things, so I'm just going to expand on that a little bit. This really did have all of my favorite things. Since I've been a little kid, had the monsters, had a Mando trying his best to survive. The elements were against him. They're on an epic journey. Well, I don't know if you could call it epic, but they're on a journey, and then they're spaceships. So I was like in heaven watching this thing. This is the kind of stuff I used to dream about when I was a kid. Whenever I watched a movie or a show as a kid, I would think, man, if they just had a monster or a fight or a spaceship in there, that show would have been awesome. And these folks are taking this, like we just were talking, these folks are taking the entire Star Wars universe and throwing a magnifying glass over it, showing us just the trials and tribulations of one dude and his troublesome little kid without losing any of the significance of the original events from the movies. It's amazing how well they're pulling it off. I'm just sitting there in awe watching these episodes, the first episode and the second episode, just like a little kid drooling out of my mouth.
Yeah, because like for The Mandalorian, he, unlike Luke Skywalker and even Rey and Finn and all of them, they're fighting kind of for the fate of the galaxy. You know, what they're doing is going to have ramifications for all the people in the galaxy. For the Mandalorian, it's more just about his own life, and he wants to now protect this child. So the stakes aren't as high, but I think it still totally works. It's kind of cool, actually, to just, it's more like exploring a little corner of things rather than being in the center. And there's less pressure for the showmakers because of that too. So they can kind of just have fun with it. But anyway, I think it totally works.
Yeah.
You know, Rich, there, you know, those books out there that are like Pride and Prejudice and zombies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think you are the perfect target market for those books. Take a classic novel, throw in some zombies, and there's a monster. Yes.
Yeah, when I heard about that, I was like, ooh, I gotta watch that.
Maybe you should write one. You should find one and write a novel. You could make millions.
I also enjoyed Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can. It can be like War and Peace and giant spiders.
Totally.
Right. Get the founding fathers kicking ass.
47 years ago, aliens invaded our great country.
God, full of brilliant ideas this week.
Those alien spiders, speaking of aliens, kind of reminded me of the movie Aliens.
Absolutely.
The spider like had like the face hugger look and the green blood. So that was a pretty cool part on the monsters there.
I think that was intentional because you have little baby Yoda going and off on his own, which is never good. And you see all these pods that look kind of, I haven't seen Alien in a while, but it reminded me of the pod the astronaut first comes upon in the Alien movie.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like looking right down into it. And then the face hugger jumps out, right? And goes right on his face. And the little spiders kind of look like that. And I think that's on purpose. They look like fingers, and he opens the pod and there's one, and he just sticks in his mouth. So I think it was almost like they knew we were going to feel that way. And then we would laugh when he just ate it.
I got to watch that movie. It's been so many years since I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. It holds up really well.
Yeah.
Well, that goes into my number three, which is the horror vibe of this episode. I like that the tone shifted from the first episode, but also once the Razor Crest, you know, skidded to a halt and then broke through the ice and fell down into the big cavern, then the tone shifted from there. Mandalorian was unconscious and he wakes up and it's quiet and he goes into the back and there's a breach in the side of the ship and snow and wind are coming in and the music turns unsettling and it's like, it's quiet and eerie. And then this goes out into the cavern and I loved how it looked kind of moody with the light coming down and the ship is all fucked up. And then when Baby Yoda points out that this frog lady went off into the cave, it's even darker there and they follow and there's more eerie music. And then that's when they find her in that pool and the Mandalorian reprimands Baby Yoda for almost eating more of the eggs in that little like makeshift hot springs hot tub that she's in. So he goes off and finds the pods. And yeah, it was just like Alien, which I consider like an alien horror movie. But then it was a creature feature because when all the little spiders broke out of the pods, it was creepy. Like, yeah. Spiders.
Mm-hmm. Watching them swarm was horrific.
Yeah. Yep. There's so many and he's like futilely shooting at them, but they're just overwhelming him. And I like how you see all the little ones first and then you see some that are like two or three times the size and oh God, there's bigger ones. And then there's one that's like 100 times bigger. Rah! And it comes through. Yeah. That was a
Mama
good
spider
progression. Like, holy shit. And then the way that it would bust its tendril or whatever, what do you call spider legs through the ice above them. And then when they got to the ship, one of them like threw a web and webbed the Mandalorian's hand to the side of his ship, like Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And then when they crawled in the ship, it was like skittering. It felt really invasive. They're skittering all along the walls and stuff. And he finally used his flamethrower at that point, which, was like, oh yeah, you should have done that a while back. But, it was scary. And one was on Baby Yoda's head and he's like, and then the frog lady shoots it off. And then you think they're going to fly away. Like the ship starts to rise and there's triumphant music and then the big giant one comes on top and its ugly, creepy alien face is seen right out the window and its big proboscis comes out and touches the glass and you see it. It's all slimy with these circles of teeth and stuff. But then he gets saved by the X-Wing pilots, which I'm like, oh, saved again. Just like last season. Remember we were saying how he would get saved like every episode. But that whole sequence, it was done so well. I just thought it was incredible.
Yeah. It was great. The spider on the glass, it reminded me of the Rathtar, I think.
Force Awakens.
Yeah, one of them with the big mouth on the front of the Millennium Falcon there a little bit. But regarding the flamethrower, I don't know if we were supposed to think this, but he did use it for a second while they were running through the like ice cavern with the spiders chasing them. But I thought, you can't use a flamethrower in there. Isn't that going to be too hot? It might melt and like cause a cave in or something. Okay. I don't know if I was supposed to be thinking that, but that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, that scene where the they were about to take off and then this big daddy mama spider came down. That was another homage, a callback to Aliens. In the Aliens, the second movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because when you think everything's over and you got, you know, the characters back on the spaceship, Mama, you know, the queen comes out of the little dropship and then they have the battle. And you're like, oh, I thought it was over.
Yeah.
Nope.
And I think, Jason, like, those are all good points about kind of the horror tone of the episode and stuff. But then, I mean, this one, they played the egg eating thing with Baby Yoda off really for laughs, I think. So yeah. there was a big shift from scene to scene in this sort of being funny and Mando having to reprimand him, don't eat that, it's not food, you know, and to like these horrific spiders chasing them. So
yeah,
it kind of did it all in this one.
I mean, this is going to be my next point, so I won't go into it too deeply, but I feel like Jon Favreau is really trying to find that line between it being okay for kids, but being edgy enough for adults,
right?
And not too Disney-fied, you know? And so I think that's what that's all about.
You're probably right. Yeah. Cause that's true. My 11-year-old will watch this probably tomorrow and will love Baby Yoda as she always does, and also be like, he's eating the eggs. That's so funny.
I had Bodhi, I just kind of fast forwarded to the spider part because I wanted to see his reaction, and he was transfixed and spider. And then, when it was over, I go, do you want to watch something else or watch that again? He goes, Mandalorian. So I started the episode over and I left the room, and about 15 minutes, he's all, daddy. And he came, and I came in, and he's like, I don't want this one. I want the spiders, because it was during the slow part of the beginning. So I had to fast forward it to the spiders again.
Well, he knows what he likes, and it's giant spiders.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
So where are we? Chris, right?
Yeah, me. So I just want to talk briefly about some of the new creatures that were in this episode. We've mentioned the spiders, of course. But the way I see it, I think there were primarily three new-ish creatures. And Jason, maybe you've done a little bit on the lore of some of these things, so we will see. But the first one is that big ant guy in the cantina, Dr. Mandible. And then we have Frog Lady, who I don't think I've ever seen in Star Wars before. And then we have the spiders, and I have, the spiders were cool, but they freaked me out a little bit. And I wasn't a big fan of Dr. Mandible, and I think I've realized something about myself, and that is that I don't like ants. and I don't know why, but I just don't. And it kind of bugs me that,
no pun intended.
In any case, when a movie takes a common earth insect like an ant, makes it giant, and then just calls it an alien, I'm like, well, really, is that all you did? You just found an ant and we're like, let's make that big and make it an intelligent creature. So I don't know, I wasn't a big fan. Not that he played a huge part in this one, but I didn't like Dr. Mandible. Spiders, similar problem, because they're kind of spiders. And then they were just made big, but they were, I think, different enough that, and there were so many of them that it, you know, I was overwhelmed with creepiness.
They could just do like Star Trek and just make everybody's foreheads look different.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It's just a person with a funny forehead. I mean, yeah. And then Frog Lady, I suppose there was nothing really inherently wrong with her, but I don't know. I kind of just found her annoying most of the time, and she only existed in the episode to be ferried from point A to point B. At least kind of that's what I thought at first. And maybe provide the comedy moments when Baby Yoda was eating the eggs. But I think all what I'm trying to say is, you know, I feel they could have done this at least for the ant guy and the frog lady with creatures, with Star Wars creatures that we recognize. And I know that may sort of make me sound like a traditionalist or call me nostalgic or something like that, but I would have liked to have seen an alien I recognize in at least one of those roles instead of these two new ones that I didn't really have any connection to. I don't know how you guys feel.
I hadn't thought about it till just now, but it doesn't bother me. I enjoyed all of the little creatures that the Star Wars universe provides.
You are the monster guy. If there's monsters, you're good.
I mean, bugs and aliens look pretty much similar to me.
My favorite moment with Frog Lady was when she used the robot Q90, I think they called him Zero, his voice. And the way they presented that with her talking in her little, and then you'd hear the robot talking in his scary English accent, that was done really well.
I did like that a lot because it gave us a way to understand her and allow her to communicate her point of view kind of thing. Right. And that's what I wanted. And Star Wars has actually always been good at doing that, even with characters that don't speak English. Right. We understand the context of the moment, when Chewbacca talks and stuff like that.
Or R2-D2
or whatever. And sometimes you have a good response from another character that does speak English that makes it clear. Here, we needed her to take over the voice box of Zero. Yeah.
I mean, with her, I thought she looked a little creepy at first, and it made me think that, and because she couldn't communicate, that there was something else going on with her that we didn't know, and maybe she was going to turn again. She kind of reminded me of a Sleestak from Land of the Lost show back when me and Rich were kids. I don't know if you ever saw that, but they're kind of reptilian and creepy. And so I wasn't always believing that she was upfront or until she took over the voice of the robot, then it felt more like, okay, she's genuine. And I don't know if that's what they had in mind or not. I actually don't think so. I mean, she's basically a frog, a giant frog. And I think that's because we've seen Baby Yoda eat frogs. And so they wanted it to make sense that he would like to eat her eggs.
Yeah, that's true. When she started running or sort of hopping like a frog, getting away, that was pretty cool. I like that. You know, she reverts to her sort of natural nature or form to get away as fast as possible. I like that.
Right. Yeah, that's how I saw that too.
Yeah, that was made me laugh. Cool. No, I liked it. I mean, I like when they pull from the lore and the history, but you're right. At least on Wikipedia, they don't know her species. So I assume that's the first time she's ever been in Star Wars. And the Dr. Mandible, the only time we've ever seen him was when Mandalorian was in the cantina last season. I guess he was in there somewhere.
Oh, but I otherwise, didn't even realize that.
Not in Star Wars, but I think his species has been in the extra materials or something. I'm not sure about that.
Has it? Okay. I wasn't sure either. Yeah, but I'm giant ants. I don't know.
Rich, number two.
Number two. You know, I watched it twice also myself. First, you know, I was just flabbergasted the first time through. The second time I concentrated a little more on the Mandalorian himself. I'm really digging his character, especially in this scene, this episode. I tell you, Mando has a lot more patience than I do, especially with his travel companions. They were getting kind of annoying. You know, the guy, he doesn't yell, he doesn't complain. Here's his kid, the child is eating up all the eggs. I mean, pretty much committing genocide, you know, and Mando's just like the kid's putting him on the spot a couple of times in this episode. Kid's devouring the frog lady's last of its kind, and Mando's like, don't do that, you know, and how many did you eat?
No.
Yeah, no. Stop. And then when the kid opens the spider eggs and wakes up the nest, Mando's like, time to go. He doesn't bother to yell at anybody or chastise anybody. What's up with the frog lady? She figures out how to turn the translator on in the robot, and she uses it basically to admonish Mando and throw a guilt trip on him. And then she runs off to a spa. That was kind of annoying to me. Still, you know, he has to go run after her and tell her that I can't protect you out here and we need to go back to the ship. Eventually, you know, I was exhausted by the end of the episode.
I wondered about that because she said that her husband, she's bringing her eggs to the estuary moon of Trask, where it's the only place in that's hospitable to their kind. So I thought, well, if they need a particular place that's hospitable to their kind, maybe she's like lacking moisture. That's just like speculation that maybe she desperately needed to go take a dip in that hot tub in order to survive the rest of the journey or something. That was the only thing I could think, because it did seem like a bit of a flimsy excuse to get them deeper into the cave to encounter the spiders.
Yeah.
She is a frog. I mean, that's a pretty good assumption, right?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So,
But, you know, I think to expand on that scene with the robot translator a little bit, Rich, you said, you know, she kind of lays a guilt trip on him, which she sort of does. But he's in the process of kind of reneging on the deal. Right. He even says the deal's off. But she brings up the fact that, you know, she thought Mandalorians were good for their word, that this was part of their code, you know, and stuff like that. And I think that was a good, again, reminder for the audience a little bit that this is the kind of guy he is and what he needs to live up to. And for him, too, in that moment, he was like, the ship's destroyed. We're stuck here. We're probably all going to die. So what does it matter anymore anyway? And she said, this is the last of my species. You've got to do this. You've got to help us get there. So I didn't mind it. I liked her. I liked the fact that she brought this up and made him rethink his approach in that moment.
It was a little hard for me to believe that he even needed that, though, because it's his mission, too. I mean, they're going to, I wasn't clear if the Mandalorians that he's looking for are supposedly on the exact same moon that she's going to, or if they're just in the same system, but she did say her husband had seen them. So I assume it's the exact same place. And so he needs to get there too, unless he's just also sort of giving up on his mission too.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he was. You're right. But I don't know, like, would the Mandalorian abandon helping her to continue his mission? Like, let's just say, would he have stranded her there and just gone off on his own? Like,
they're going to the same place. So,
yeah, I know, but for whatever reason, like, I don't think he would do that. So
right. I see what you're saying.
He just needed that reminder of the code, and he had a moment of doubt or something, you know? And
Yeah. I felt in this episode, the second time I watched it, I felt like I was on the journey and in survival mode right alongside Mando. And I was just like, boy, this poor guy constantly having to solve problems, constantly having to MacGyver up solutions, you know,
and make deals with everybody to get what he wants. Right. Last week he had to be like, all right, fine. I'll kill the crate dragon if you give me that armor. And this week it's like, okay, I'll drive you to this moon to get the information and kill a bunch of spiders. So, you know,
I know. And I wouldn't be able to do that. That's my point. I would be just like pissed off and angry and probably would have stranded everybody on that planet and taken off on my own. So I was like, this guy's a great guy. He's got it all.
Screw you guys. I'm out of here.
He even has time to tell a joke at the end.
Right. We'd all be dead. Okay. My number two is, as I mentioned before, about edginess and how I feel like Favreau's trying to walk that line between keeping this good for kids, but also edgy enough that it's not too Disney-fied. And there's a few different ways I thought that happened in this episode. For one, I've said before, I think Pelimoto is one of the more Disney-fied characters on the show, but they made her more edgy by making her this kind of shifty gambler where she's playing sabacc with cards, basically with Dr. Mandible. And he says he can connect Mandalorian with someone who can help him find other Mandalorians. But she says, if you can just cover his call this round, he's on a hot streak. So I think that was her basically saying, if you can just put in for his bet, then, you know, he'll probably win and he can just pay you right back because he's on a hot streak, when she damn well knew that she had a great hand and was probably going to kill him and ended up with Mandalorian's money. At least that's what I got out of it, because he goes, hey, I thought you said he was on a hot streak. And she's like, stop your crying, you'll rust.
That was good. But see, that's the best thing they could do with that character right now, is get her out of the shop or the landing pad where she works into a different environment and expand her a little bit.
So, yeah. And make her, I mean, and also she said she would vouch for this traveler on her life. And then you find out like 2 minutes later, she just met her. So it's like, maybe she's not as trustworthy or as solid as we quite thought, which I love. Like, I want her to be a little more interesting in that way, I guess. So that was cool.
Yeah, agreed. And also get her away from the goofy robots she works with.
Yeah.
I think they just distract from her character too much. So put her somewhere else for a minute.
But it did call back to when in the first season she was playing sabacc with them. And I'm like, oh, she practices at home. Mm-hmm. So she can go to the cantina. And, okay. Also, kind of, you were talking about this earlier, Chris, but it's dangerous everywhere. There's marauders on Tatooine. He gets ambushed. I thought that was an awesome fight. And I love the jetpack thing. And that was even kind of dark, though. Like, he sends that guy up and then thump, comes crumpling down on the ground, dead.
Yep.
Like, Mando, if you cross him, he will kill you, no problem. But then they make it funny because, like, Baby Yoda's looking up at him and he just kind of shrugs. What are you going to do?
And then the jetpack lands and slowly falls over.
Yeah, it's just nicely done. And then, like he mentions that if he has to go in sublight speed, that there's marauders and pirates out there. So you just get it. It's very much an Old West lawless feel. Like there's just danger everywhere, which I like.
Yeah, and it never loses that feel too.
Yeah, it's cool. And then last but not least is actually think this stuff with the eggs, even though it was played for laughs, it makes Baby Yoda a little edgier because there's misdirection. Like they play on our expectations of him being just this lovable little cute guy. When he first sees Frog Lady carrying her tank full of eggs, there's this kind of dreamy, magical music as he looks on. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe he sees her as a friend or something. There's a connection. And then later on, that same dreamy music is playing on the ship and he is in the back by himself and approaches the tank and presses his nose up to the glass. And it feels like something like E.T. magical is about to happen. and then like maybe he's going to incubate or I don't know. And then he looks back to see if anyone is watching. And then it shifts to Mandalorian. He goes back there to take a rest and he catches Baby Yoda pulling an egg out and he goes, no, 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 no. And then he slipped in his mouth. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like simultaneously laughing and horrified at that.
Yeah. And I think you were supposed to be, but it came off way more on the side of comedy than anything else for me.
I mean, they made a point for her to say this was the last of her line. And I think it's pretty dark. I mean, I was like, to the point where I wasn't sure I was seeing what I was seeing. Like, did he really just do that? And then later they fall through the ice and it's eerie and the Mandalorian's back looking for the eggs and pulls up this tarp and there's Baby Yoda holding another egg and Mandalorian rips the tank away. I told you not to do that. And he goes to the frog, I found them. And then he sucks in the other egg.
Yeah. Like, what about the final shot of the episode? He's got an egg and he eats it. Like,
yeah. Well, this is like, it's another little piece of misdirection, I think, because she had shot that spider off his head at that point. And they're all stuck up in the cockpit there together. So they're in frame together. And he looks back at her and there's nice music. And it's like, you think, okay, now she's saved his life. He's learned his lesson. He sees that she cares deeply about these eggs. So he's learned his lesson. Then he turns around and eats another one.
It's like he pulled it out of his pocket. He's had it in there the whole time.
Yeah.
Ooh, yummy.
Yeah. I think he's just eating them.
Yeah, I think so too.
Just
I really
being a
do.
Kid yeah. doing the instinctive thing, you know?
He's right. like, these are yummy. And he knows he's not supposed to because he keeps looking to see if anybody's right. watching.
Yeah.
And I missed the part too where she's in the little like hot tub and he's like looking down. He's like moving towards him. And that's when the Mandalorian stuck his finger out. No, no. And I'm like, dude, I am right there. My son is 3. He is like, I feel like Mandalorian, like an embarrassed parent sometimes because Bodhi is, I love him to death, but he's the kid that the other daycare parents call the hitter right now.
Oh, no.
Oh, your kid is the hitter. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Oh, at least he's not the biter.
I know. Totally. So anyway, I enjoyed this. I think it's dark. It's funny as hell. And to me, it actually does take away the Disney-fied aspect of Baby Yoda just that little bit. For them to have this dark humor.
I don't know. See, the humor for me amplified the Disneyfication of it a little bit. Yeah. I found it too goofy, I think, a lot of it.
I mean, I was thinking, like, because, you know, Jenny and I, we had Bodhi via, what do you call it, in vitro fertilization, you know, because we tried to have kids for a long time and couldn't. And so, you learn when you're studying all that women have a very limited supply of eggs that they're born with. And once they're gone, they're gone. And so I wonder if women, this is kind of weird to be talking about, but if women watching this it might be more disturbing to them. And I was also wondering, doesn't she know, like, wouldn't she see that some are missing?
Yeah. My wife was watching it with me and she didn't say much, but every time Yoda ate an egg, she'd be like, Oh my God. to be like, yeah, look what he's doing. He's killing these little frog people.
Yeah.
She's all, she, and then she's like, oh, well, they're not even fertilized yet. Then won't be if he eats them all.
No, that's right. That's the end of the entire civilization or, you know, organism.
Right.
At first, I interpreted it as that was the last of the species, but on second watch, I was paying attention and it was just their family line, but still.
Oh, still.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you, Rich, you haven't spoke much about that whole thing. What did you think of that story element?
The eggs eating?
Yeah.
I found it. I didn't put too much stock into it. I kind of suspected because when the frog lady put her eggs down and the baby Yoda was eyeballing him, I was like, oh, look. Because I instantly remembered he ate frogs in season one. So I was like, ooh, this is going to be interesting. I bet you he's going to eat some of the eggs. Of course he did.
I was shocked.
I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, man.
But I agree. It does transmit a little bit of a dark element in there, you know? Yeah. It's like, hey.
If not for Baby Yoda, then at least for the show to make a joke about something like that is...
Yeah.
It's a little and I like, think edgy humor.
Literally, this kid can get away with murder because he's so damn cute.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't think she saw him do any of it.
Yeah. How come she didn't notice her eggs were missing? I kept waiting for that.
Right.
I guess there were enough of them that she just wasn't even sure how many were in there to begin with. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, number one.
Well, it overlaps with that a lot, actually, because I do think there was some parenting and lineage themes to this episode, which we've kind of talked about, at least from the sort of species or family lineage angle of things. But, you know, I think Mando is, well, he is, of course, essentially the parent slash guardian of the child right now. And I thought this was the first time we really see him struggle with this in a way. Because of what directly the child was doing kind of thing. You know, he struggled with the idea of traveling with it and taking it places, but, actually kind of being a guardian or a parent to it is, that felt a little bit new to me. And it sort of came up, I thought, because Baby Yoda came across in this one as like a troublesome toddler who wouldn't listen and who was getting into things and
was threatened too in the beginning with the ambush. That really brought it home too. He was ready to give up the Boba Fett armor or whatever to save the kid.
Wow, come on. I think he knew that whatever he gave up, he would get back. But you're right. I mean, it was definitely threatened. Yeah. Somebody was out there specifically like, I'm taking that child, right? But, you know, I think Mando has started to realize that keeping him safe, quote unquote, is not really the only job. You've got to feed him. You've got to keep an eye on what they're doing. You've got to provide entertainment. And
he probably needs to feed him. That's a good point.
Yeah.
He seems hungry.
He
seems hungry. He's always finding things to eat. You know, you've got to provide entertainment and education and all these things. And anyways, I just thought that was kind of interesting in this episode. And, you know, I was going to talk a little bit about the frog lady and her eggs and the lineage and stuff, but I think we've already really covered that. So I think it's just Mando becoming a better parent and learning what actually has to be done to keep this kid safe as they travel around the universe.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant by the showrunners. A little something for dad.
Yeah, totally.
There you go. That's
this
right.
This is totally a dad show.
He's got to be a good dad.
If this show is extra realistic, then that little knob that Baby Yoda likes to play with, that should be missing now because it would be lost.
That's true. It would be lost forever.
Probably would have swallowed it by now. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Baby Yoda puts everything in his mouth.
Okay, Rich.
You know, I'm going to give a shout out to the New Republic. Chris mentioned earlier, you know, once you get past the visual of seeing some X-Wings for the first time in a long time, I was
so
like,
cool.
Yeah, X-Wings.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about the New Republic, and I was like, oh, yeah, see, they keep shining a magnifying glass on these moments in the show, but it keeps the overall universe in the background, is always in the back of your mind when you're watching this show. That was reminding me about that the New Republic in this Star Wars universe, the whole galaxy is a governed union, right? And that fight between the Empire and the Republic in the first three movies is considered a civil war because the entire galaxy is supposed to be unified. And I always liked the idea of an entire galaxy where you could travel around freely to different worlds without worrying too much, you know, as long as you have the right paperwork. Or in this case, if he had the right transponder.
Uh-huh.
Plus, it was totally cool when the pilots went to Channel 2 and were discussing Mando, and then silently you see the wings open up on the X-Wings, and you're like, oh no,
something's fighting gonna go positions.
Down. Well, the best part is we all know what that means, right?
Yeah.
That is
exactly.
That is what I loved. It was so great.
Right.
That's great.
And you can't see poor Mando's face, but I don't know about you guys, but I was just like, I could just imagine he had a look of exasperation on his face. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
God
shit.
Damn it.
He was like, I was so hoping to avoid this.
Right.
Right. And then that's immediately when he has to start fleeing into the atmosphere of the planet. Which
well, it's like he got pulled over and the guy reached for his gun. That's what that's like.
That's pretty much. Yeah. 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 I was going to say that like chase sequence down through the clouds and onto the planet and into the ice trench. Very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Especially loved the part where he went into the clouds and then he kind of stopped and then tilted backwards and fell backwards.
Yeah.
I felt a little queasy right there. Like I was on a roller coaster, which is unusual in those scenes. That was so effective. I thought
it was so good.
The frog lady, she was screaming for her life.
Right. They're saying you can't take these eggs into light speed because it'll destroy it. I'm like, they were crashing and falling and jostling around and
it seems a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, a lot more.
And then at the end of all of this, right, you still, like we were talking about the Old West flavor of the show, you know, the X-Wing dudes show up and kind of, you know, they shoot all the spiders off of Mando's ship and they're kind of like, they're dispensing some frontier justice right there. They're clearing a path for him to leave, but they don't actually help him leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of an eye for an eye thing, you know, in these trying times. So I was like, yeah, there you go. This is a cool show.
Yeah, I mean, like you're mentioning it's a unified galaxy now, but I think it is supposed to be like the Wild West, you know, the lawless frontier on the fringes where civilization hasn't quite reached yet, you know, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, I read that the New Republic is like a governing body, but most planets, especially the ones on the outer rim, they're responsible for their own defense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, now time for callbacks and lore. So Dr. Mandible, this ant-looking creature playing cards, we saw him in the cantina last season. He's a Killick, which have shown up here and there in non-canon Star Wars material. Well, maybe it was canon before the Legends, but now, you know, it's considered non-canon, but they did take it from, I think there was in a game, and so it did exist elsewhere in Star Wars materials, but not in any of the main stuff. Pelimoto's playing Sabacc with Dr. Mandible. That's, of course, the game that Lando Calrissian lost the Millennium Falcon to Han Solo playing, and then we saw her playing with her pit droids last season.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it elsewhere, too. Pelimoto says a Mandalorian covert is close. It's in this sector one system trailing. So, and she didn't know if it was the same group that came from Navarro where, you know, Mando's group had to leave. But anyway, it seems like the Mandalorians are all like scattered in hidden groups and there's no wider network. There's no contact between them. It seems like, and it's a little weird to me, like after the Empire's great purge that they keep talking about, I think that's when they all had to scatter and hide. But now that the Empire's fallen, why is it not safe to come out into the open? I don't quite understand that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good question, actually.
And it's like, what do the Mandalorians know that he couldn't get from anyone else? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, do they have some sort of secret, I don't know,
right? We don't
database
know
of
yet.
Where
maybe we'll find out.
Baby Yoda could exist. I don't know.
I also think it's a little silly that the Mandalorian want to be anonymous and live in secret, and also they're not allowed to take off their easily identifiable Mandalorian helmets.
That's right. Nobody's ever seen one and gone like, "I don't. Who are you again?" Yeah.
Yeah. The frog lady, we don't know her species, but yeah, her husband has settled in, Pelimoto said her husband settled in the estuary moon of Trask in the system of the gas giant Kol Ibin or something. Estuary is the tidal mouth of a large river, so maybe this is a moon covered in water or that has a lot of, well, I mean, that's what I assume, right? A frog planet.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, let's see, I don't know if the Mandalorian covert, maybe it's on the same one or another one in the like solar system. Or if Frog Lady's even telling the truth. Hopefully we'll find out. I wonder if they're still going there. Maybe we'll find out next week. Pelimoto, as the bots were cooking her crate dragon steak using the ship engine, said, "Hey, don't overcook it, Treadwell. I like it medium rare. I'm not some Rodian, for crying out loud." A Rodian is the same species as Greedo. So I guess they like their steaks well done or something. I don't know.
I guess so. That says a lot about Rodians.
Right. That was rocket roasted dragon meat.
That was a big old piece of meat.
It was.
high speed chases and shootouts is a definite Star Wars thing. So yeah, when Mando's land speeder was speeding along in that canyon, I got a flavor of that same kind of thing, as we've seen, you know, in the pod races in the prequels, which is probably the best thing about the prequels, maybe, or of course the X-wings or the rebels coming down into the trench in the Death Star. And here we have these two X-wings chasing the Razor Crest down, and he sees a trench in the ice planet, like an ice chasm. And that made me remember that too, the trench in the Death Star.
Yeah, yeah, it's the first thing I thought, Death Star trench, but in an ice planet, yeah.
Right.
Shout out to the Mando's armor. I mean, he never takes it off, but, he wears it in the 100-degree-plus Tatooine environment, and now he's just as at home when it's freezing cold outside. I don't wonder if it's, like, thermally controlled or something inside.
I think his armor looked really cool when it was all frosty and cold. Like, it had frost on it, and it just, I thought it looked really neat.
I did, too.
He did a good job of that.
Super cool. And I was thinking, I was more worried about him in the desert after the land speeder crashed and he was having to carry everything. I'm like, man, it must be hot in there. He must have an AC in there or something.
Yeah.
So one of the X-Wing pilots named Trapper Wolf is played by executive producer Dave Filoni, who, worked on Clone Wars and created the Rebels show. And the second one is called Carson Teva. He's played by Korean Canadian comedian and actor Paul Sun Hyung Lee.
Hmm. That's right. I was going to bring him up too because of him being Korean Canadian. And I don't expect either of you guys to have heard of it, but he's on a fairly popular Canadian sitcom called Kim's Convenience, about a family that runs a convenience store in Toronto. And it's a pretty popular show. A lot of people like it, but it was fun for us to see, or for me. And I guess if there's any other Canadian listeners out there, it was fun to see him on a show like this, being an X-Wing pilot. It's must be a pretty fun for him too.
Yeah, right on.
I was wondering if you knew who it was. That's cool.
Yeah.
But the first one, Dave Filoni, he plays Trapper Wolf. That's actually one of the X-Wing pilots who blew up the space station at the end of that prison ship episode. So it's the same character.
Cool.
Mm.
So they say to Mando, "We notice your transponder is not emitting, and can you ping us?" And all craft are required to run a beacon, and that they're out sweeping for Imperial holdouts. Basically, this is all just sounds like it's about, your ship. Well, you need to register your car, sir, basically like that, somehow the ship can tell you if it's got a warrant out on it or whatever.
They're like the DMV.
Yeah. and they're looking for Imperial holdouts. And I wasn't sure why Mando was worried, because he's not an Imperial holdout, but I guess he knew that he would have a price on his head for busting out that Twi'lek prisoner Quinn last season.
Yeah.
And he did. Like, I think that was the idea. I'm not sure how they figured out it was his ship, but they say, "Was your craft in the proximity of New Republic Correctional Transport Bothan 5, which is that prison ship?" And that's when the chase started.
Well, they asked him for a ping, right? And so that must be some sort of identifier. And they knew what the identifier they were looking for, because he really didn't want to send that ping over at first, but I guess he knew it would reveal him to him, and then he had to escape. So
I mean, my point is, when they got to the ship, they seemed to think that they parked it in a place where it wouldn't be detected, the prison ship.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So how
yeah,
would they?
Yeah.
But they did have. They said the X-Wing guys let him go at the end because they said he left them three wanted men and, you know, helped their guy put his life on the line for their guy. And mm-hmm. they said onboard security records showed that he apprehended three other wanted criminals and put himself in harm's way to protect Lieutenant Davon. So I guess they had maybe video footage of him, but maybe they also somehow recorded the ship as it was flying away or something like that. I don't know.
Right, right.
But those three bounties that, they said he left, that was Mayfeld's, the Twi'lek Shion, and Berg, the Deveronian, played by Clancy Brown, Mayfeld by Bill Burr. That's what they're talking about. And I think they probably did that whole vocal thing with the robot Zero in part to remind us of that prison ship episode, since it was going to, you know, they were going to reference it at the end there.
Right. Yeah. And in the the very beginning, when they were doing the, you know, the review of previous episodes, he was in that. And I was like, what? Why is he in that? I didn't get it till the second time I watched the show.
Right. Yep. Right. The spider creatures are called Krikna. And they were seen in Star Wars Rebels, where they harassed the characters Ezra and Sabine more than a few times. They were originally actually created by the famed Star Wars artist Ralph McQuarrie, you know, who did all those Star Wars paintings to help them conceptualize all the characters and everything. And they were supposed to face off against Luke on Dagobah while he was training with Yoda, but I guess they couldn't fit it in or didn't have the technology or something, but that was the idea. And if you see the pictures that Ralph McQuarrie made, they look almost exactly like they do in this episode. So they're still pulling stuff from the past like that.
Kind of cool. Oh, that's cool. I got to look that up because Ralph McQuarrie is amazing. His art is amazing. And I sort of thought those spiders were new, but it sounds like they've been around for a long time in the universe.
Yeah, I think, they have. Yeah. Cool. And the last one I have here, I wondered if the ice planet they landed on was Hoth, but it's not. And I'm glad because I don't want the galaxy to seem too small and always go to the same place. It's fun to see new locations. But actually, we've seen this place before because it's a planet called Maldo Kreese, and it's the same planet that Mando went to in the very first episode to get his bounty, that blue guy in the bar. At least that's what Wikipedia says.
Interesting. Okay, then.
I don't know how they know that, but that's what they said.
Sure, why not?
Okay, any notes, Chris?
Yeah, I got a few. The episode was directed by Peyton Reed, who also did Marvel's Ant-Man movies. So maybe we shouldn't be so surprised to see a giant ant character. We had no Boba Fett in this one, which is fine, of course. Although I couldn't help but think, you know, we have Mando leaving Tatooine now on his way somewhere else where Boba Fett is presumably staying. So I feel like that means we probably cycle back to Tatooine at some point in the rest of this season because, I don't know, I can't see Boba Fett leaving, but maybe he will. I'm not so sure. And then, let's see, we talked about the X-Wing pilot. Oh, I thought it was funny, kind of funny, when Mando goes and finds Frog Lady having her bath with the eggs. I sort of felt like that was a kind of intimate moment, and he just walks in and starts gathering up the eggs and is like, get the hell out of there. What are you doing?
Don't touch my eggs.
Yeah, like she's a frog. Well, I mean, she's a frog, but she's naked in the bath, and he's just like, come on, what are you doing? Get out of there. I thought that was funny. And then right at the end, near the end, when the giant spider is on top and attacking the Razor Crest, it clearly smashes its legs into the cockpit through the glass. You hear the glass breaking.
Yeah, I was and thinking then, the same thing.
And then you see the ship from the outside. The glass isn't broken. At the end, Mando says he can pressurize the cockpit and they can fly through space. And I'm thinking, did he fix the glass? Was it ever even broken? I felt like that was a little bit of a continuity problem, but
yeah.
I am sort of nitpicking a bit.
And also, It seems pretty like easy that he can just fix up a spaceship and get it into condition to go out to space, given what we know about how hard it is for like the NASA engineers to make space shuttles and stuff. But I guess it's Star Wars. Well, so
sure. Right. Yeah, it's Star Wars, but it did
just
seem
weld it shut.
I was actually fine with the idea of they all had to crowd into the cockpit. Like, as long as the engines are going, you can't pressurize the rest of the ship, but they can stay in the cockpit. But I'm like, yeah, but the canopy's broken. But then it wasn't. So maybe we do see him fixing some stuff. So maybe he could fix it somehow. But, you know, nitpick. I got to have one.
I kind of wondered if this means Mando will get a new ship since it's in pretty bad shape.
Oh geez, I love the Razor Crest.
I do too. Yeah,
I'm
That'd be like selling your Ferrari, man.
Yeah, I get closer and closer to every day to buying the Lego Razor Crest because I really want to make it. I really want to build it.
Sweet.
That's all I've got for notes.
Right on. I think that pretty much covers it for me too. I think we got it all done.
Okay.
It was nice to see the cantina. I wrote that down.
Yeah, again.
One last time, maybe not, but maybe I've always enjoyed that scene.
Regular location. Yeah, I like when they go there. Why not?
Yeah.
Okay, I only had a few. I think this is the first time we see the bunk where Mando sleeps. Door slides away.
Well, we've seen in there before, I didn't realize he sleeps in there. I thought that's just where he stuck Baby Yoda.
Oh, yeah. We've seen that? Okay, I didn't remember.
Yeah.
I don't know if Mando has called Baby Yoda kid before, but he did in this episode. Hey, kid, where are you going? So I guess that's what he calls him.
Sure.
And I guess, that's basically it. I mean, I just wonder where they're going. Do you think that they're headed towards their original destination? Seems like it, right?
They're going to the frog lady's Trask. Husband, right?
Yeah.
Who says that he's seen a Mandalorian on that planet. So I think that's our next stop.
Where they're going.
Yeah, I would agree. I suppose if they were much closer to Tatooine, they could go back to get repaired and then try again. But
right,
if they're on their way, I'm with Rich. I think they're on their way there, and that's where we're going to end up next week.
Unless there's a detour.
I suppose, unless there's a detour.
Yeah. Well, he said he's got to get his ship fixed at the, and he said the next place, but I thought that was this planet that they're going to.
Maybe the frogs have a ship-fixing place.
Why not? They're frogs and expert ship mechanics.
Right. All right. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, just a couple of things in the news. On November 17th, so coming up just a bit here, the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special premieres on Disney Plus.
Lego Star Wars Holiday Special? That's awesome. I'm watching that.
I'm there. Yeah, and if you have Disney Plus, you get it. It's inspired by the infamous, I would say, 1978 Star Wars Holiday Special.
Uh-huh.
There's a pretty detailed synopsis. Should I read it? Or would you rather not know?
I wonder, Lego's pretty good at parodying stuff in their movies and their shows. I wonder, is this a parody of the Star Wars Holiday Special?
It's a new story. I'm not going to read it because I think it's a little detailed, but I'll give the gist. So it takes place after episode 9 and Rey is the main character. It has to do with Life Day, the Wookiee holiday that was first featured in the first holiday special. And I imagine, based on this, that it'll be funny and it'll kind of parody the first one, but it'll also have an actual story that runs through about family and love and heart and things like that.
Sure. Well, and maybe in 40 years, people will be looking back going, oh my God, I can't believe that was on TV.
Yeah, I have a feeling this one will be better, but we'll see.
Probably.
And then there's rumors about various different possible Mandalorian / Star Wars series or miniseries, like a Boba Fett miniseries. If that one's true, then I thought, oh, maybe we won't see Boba Fett again in The Mandalorian. Maybe that was just to introduce him, which I would rather not be the case. I want the Mandalorian story to be contained within this series, I would say.
Right. Yeah, please don't do that.
Yeah.
They mentioned this was all on Deadline. So usually they, you know, they're pretty good, but it did say it was rumors, but a Cara Dune series, a series about Star Wars Rebels character Bo-Katan Kryze, which is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but she's rumored to appear in the season of The Mandalorian, played by Battlestar Galactus Katie Sackhoff. So I hope that's true, because I like her. And then they mentioned a female-centered action thriller series with martial arts elements set in an alternate timeline from the usual Star Wars universe as a rumored series. That seems pretty specific. And then, meanwhile, we heard shooting for the confirmed Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus series starring Ewan McGregor is supposed to start in March of next year to possibly premiere at the end of that year or the beginning of 2022. So there's all these series and possible series coming out. What do you guys think about that?
Well, because the Obi-Wan is a real thing, like, I'm looking forward to that. The rest of them, you know, I'll check them out, but I don't know. There isn't the connection to, like, we have with Ben Kenobi, but Cara Dune is pretty cool, so I check that out. But I also don't want them to overdo it, and like you said, keep the Mandalorian story sort of in his own show. That sounds like a better idea to me.
Yeah. My thing is no movies and no spinoffs until this series is done.
Mm.
Interesting. Because you think it'll soil.
Yeah, like you said, Jay, I don't want them to take characters away. I don't want them to take pieces of the story away and put him in another episode, you know, another show. I want to see it all right here.
Yeah, me too. Like, I just don't mess with The Mandalorian. Like, right now, at this point, I'm pretty disenchanted with Star Wars as a whole after the sequel series is said and done. Ugh, I'm not into it. And I love The Mandalorian, so I kind of don't care what they do outside of The Mandalorian, as long as it doesn't mess with The Mandalorian, and I'll definitely check them out. And if they're good, that's great. If not, I just won't watch it.
Right. But I'm with you, Chris. I am looking forward to the Obi-Wan. And that's in a different time, though, right? Not going to be any crossover.
Yeah, it should be in between the prequels and the original movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And this story that we're watching right now takes place after Return of the Jedi.
Correct.
And Obi-Wan is dead.
Okay, time for some listener feedback.
All right, first one here is Simon Ludborza. Ice spiders as big as hounds. That's it.
Austin Medesian. The first scene was awesome. It was exactly what you think would happen if Mando was ambushed.
Yeah, I agree. It was perfect. I liked it.
Very cool. John Bucket says, another fantastic chapter. Love the cave beasties. Spiders don't normally bother me, but these things, yeesh. More of the best Star Wars content since Return of the Jedi. Glorious. I have spoken.
I have spoken. Pake Allen writes, creepy ice world alien spiders. No, thank you. It was actually super cool, though, and I enjoyed the episode. Mando and his adventures are always a lot of fun.
Barry Evitz, wow. I was on the edge of my seat. I loved this episode. Very effective horror set pieces, which had me genuinely concerned for the character's well-being. But I must say, as much as I love Mando and the child together, if he just keeps letting that kiddo wander off and put whatever into its mouth, maybe he shouldn't be fostering. LOL.
Yeah, he's learning how to be a parent. That's what I was saying. He'll figure it out. But for now, it's tough.
Barry's going to call Child Protective Services on him.
I know this guy. He wears crazy armor and he's got a little green child with big ears and he's not doing it very well.
He eats a lot of eggs.
Yeah. He lets him eat whatever he wants. Spiders.
Also, he murders lots of people right in front of him.
Right in front of him. The kid's seen so many things.
Ben Beck says, I thought it was another great episode. Maybe not as strong as the premiere, but who don't love a great Star Wars dogfight slash ship chase? Totally. I'm debating if I want to call it a filler episode, but I'll hold off on that judgment until I see next week and if this passenger job or where he's going plays into the main story. Regardless, still a fun episode. That's kind of a good point. I bet you it's kind of part one of the story. I don't think they're just going to abandon this whole thing of him delivering Frog Lady, and I bet she'll have something to do with the story, but who knows?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have to resolve it somehow, and it hopefully is next week. I hope Frog Lady isn't with him for like the rest of the season. That I'm not so into, but pretty good. Pretty good imitation. Okay. Ben Beck writes, I thought it was another
one.
You just did that one. Damian Vitale. I'll try to pay attention. I enjoyed it. Those spider eggs reminded me of Aliens when we saw all the facehugger pods start to open. Hilarious ending with the Razor Crest flying away, basically being held together with duct tape, sputtering through space. Was that the original cantina on Tatooine?
Yep.
I believe it was, yes.
Yeah. Michael Darwin. A lot of fun for a seemingly side questy episode. If I can slip on my biology lab coat for a sec, the Krikna spider scene seems inspired by an actual biological phenomena, as there are species of frogs and salamanders, not space spiders, alas, that will hatch early if snakes or Yodas start snacking on nearby eggs. Lastly, I love how they use the adorableness of Baby Yoda to gloss over some rather dark humor, in this case, the devouring of Frog Lady's precious few remaining spawn.
Yep. Yeah. If you cool, start cool. snacking on eggs, that's funny.
Mandy Castillo says, I watched it with my two sons, ages 7 and 10, and maybe it was their excitement or the fact that it felt like I was riding Star Tours, but does it matter? I love this episode. I love that Jon Favreau is not afraid to give us over-the-top species like Mrs. Frog. It just makes this series feel like it's straight out of Return of the Jedi.
Kirk Manley. Fucking awesome. This show is one of the best produced and created TV shows of all time. The sets, effects, cinematography, stories are feature film quality every single week. It's also the best thing to come out of the Star Wars universe since Rogue One. I'm absolutely loving it. I am wondering if the kid is eating the lizard lady's eggs to protect them or help them in some way. I'm going to be kind of bummed if he really is just snacking on them because they're yummy, LOL.
I think he is.
I think so too.
Eric Fetton, it was the Star Wars / Alien crossover I never knew I wanted. And we laughed at the child committing genocide.
Funny stuff.
Uh-huh. Alicia Stout says, Baby Yo stole the show, sneaking those eggs. He can do the worst thing, and as long as he coos and bats those big eyes, it's still so damn cute. Those spiders gave me big Harry Potter vibes and gave me the willies. Nope, nope, and nope.
No, thank you. Okay, we have an email from Todd Hill. He writes, Hi, Chris, Jason, and Rich. It's great to have the show back and to listen to your thoughts on it. I liked the episode. I was listening to you talk about the dead Sarlacc, and I couldn't help but think of a book I read a long time ago. I think it was called Tales of the Bounty Hunter. In it, this mummy-looking dude named Dangar pulls Boba Fett out of the Sarlacc pit after Boba had killed the Sarlacc. I wonder if that was the dead Sarlacc they were talking about. What do you guys think? Well, I love the podcast and look forward to the next one. Take care, Todd Hill.
I forgot to look that up after I read your letter, but I think that was a story that was in the extended universe and is now not considered canon.
So they can retcon this on the show all they want regarding Sarlaccs. Yeah.
And when they were talking about the dead Sarlacc, the implication was that the Krayt dragon killed it, or at least that's what they thought. But maybe, they say, okay, none of this stuff is canon anymore unless we bring it back. And then sometimes they bring back the same thing. So maybe it'll be the same thing.
Yeah, it's true. Right.
We also have an email from Chris Abaji. Hi guys. Great show last week as usual. Well prepared and insightful. Speaking of last week's episode, one of my favorite moments not discussed is when the dragon visits the village and everyone runs and hides except Mando and the Marshal, who both stare at the dragon side by side and never even flinch the whole time. That was the moment I knew the Marshal had integrity. another scene in this series where no dialogue is spoken, but much is said. In terms of this week's episode, I enjoy the slow pace of the show and encountering new characters. I'm in for the adventure, more so than knowing the final conclusion of the story. My thoughts, he gives us a little bullet list. Favorite scene is when the frog character started jumping like a frog. I found the conversation where Mando reluctantly agrees to take the frog was a little rushed and difficult to follow. And finally, Mando speaks of the Force but doesn't connect the dots about Baby Yoda's powers? Question mark. Maybe to him it's just something that's supposed to be said. Look forward to your podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, he says, may the Force be with you to the X-Wing pilots.
Right.
And I do think that's something you just say and don't even think about what it is, you know?
Yeah, because we heard it last week, too.
Yeah.
Thank the Force, I think they said.
Like,
yeah, that's right.
You know, I was in India, and this is a little different, but kind of, and there's this holiday called Holi, which you may have seen if you watch those like Bollywood movies where they dance and they throw colored powder on that day at everybody. So these kids like threw this colored powder all over me and got it all over my clothes, which was actually really fun. But I asked somebody, what is this holiday about? And they're like, I don't really know. And I thought that was kind of weird. But then I thought, yeah, you know, like Easter with a bunny. I don't know what the hell the bunny is about. And you know, why do we have a Christmas tree? I think it's some pagan thing, but I don't even remember. So it's funny how we have these traditions that you just kind of do and you don't even remember the roots of it. So it could be kind of something like that.
I guess it's hard for us as the audience to hear someone say, may the Force be with you and not know what that means, right? But you're right, maybe in universe, maybe it's not as, it's just one of those things that people don't really think about anymore.
And what else did he had a question or something. I liked your point about the marshal and how he didn't flinch and had integrity, and I thought that was a cool little bromance between him and Mandalorian, where one of them said, I hope we meet again at the end, because they both recognized that they were good, solid dudes, I guess.
Yeah, good dudes.
Yeah.
All right, and we got our call from Steve Brown.
Hey, guys, it's Steve. This is for The Mandalorian, The Passenger. You know, it was a decent episode. I'm not going to say it was great. It was only the second one of the season, so I'm not going to treat it too harshly. It was good. It was, I enjoyed it. I started watching it for the second time and decided to go ahead and send this in now. I really like the cold open, the whole ambush thing. I was a little curious that they'd be able to time it just right, but it was a great scene to see him, to see Mando fight. And as soon as that Jawa wanted the jetpack and he set it down, I was like, doesn't he control that jetpack? So I kind of knew something was going to happen there, but, just an enjoyable episode. It wasn't, huge, but it moves the story forward, and, we'll see where we go from here. I love, hearing some of the politics of the New Republic. Knowing that they're out there and they're kind of doing their thing, and the two X-Wing pilots kind of like telling him, you know, we know there's a warrant for you, but we know you did a good thing, so we're going to let you kind of go. So it'll be interesting to see the next episode. It's interesting. This one started right where the last one ended, so I wonder if the next one will start right where this one ended. Okay, talk to you later.
Yeah, maybe they'll do that all season, just have it be like one big movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And I feel like this one we've kind of talked about, but I feel like it kind of has to, because we need to resolve Frog Lady's story. So,
yeah,
you know, if she's just gone and the ship is all repaired, it's like, well, what happened? Where?
Yeah,
you know,
what was that
what did
all
we
about?
Skip over? Yeah, exactly.
And then Baby Yoda burps.
That's right. Oh, I see what happened. Yeah.
Oh, he ate them all.
Oh well.
Oh well. Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to write in to our show or record a message, like a voice message, and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And we're also on Twitter and Instagram at House Podcastica.
Please check out our other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com and check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com.
Please do.
All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
What's for breakfast? Eggs, anyone?
Yummy eggs.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.